Welcome to HR Talk with JC and Ricky. I am the face. Really enjoy this. That's strictly sarcasm. Maybe the show will be good. I can't promise anything.
Ladies and gentlemen, big kudos there going out to the face of the franchise, the guy that's actually on the cover art. When you find the show on Apple, Google, any one of those podcast platforms, and thank you to all of them for picking us up. But you're going to find this picture of this guy screaming. That's him leading us in every time. You know, his motivation seems to be dipping, Rick. There's a difference in personalities between the three of us. I really hope that we could get him a bit more motivated on some of the newer intros as we move forward. What do you think about that?
We do. I need to turn up my salesman pitch.
You need to turn on the smoker.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know what? I could throw money at him. I could throw tickets. I could throw anything at him, but nothing really works like smoked barbecue wings. If I put that on the grill of the smoker, he shows up. It's like seeing Beetlejuice three times. If you turn a smoker on, his face just appears regardless of what time it is of the day. So,
Ricky.
Yeah, I missed the guy.
Ricky, let me tell you, it's been a crazy week so far. There's so much going on in the news, you know, from Don Cherry and everything happening up in Canada to NFL players beating the crap out of each other over the head with stuff and kicking each other in the balls. There's a lot going on, man, you know. And at the end of the day, the biggest thing that we have to consider with all this, all the way down to like the animosity you have towards me for how amazing I am on the show, it comes down to the personality types, man. It really does. And thankfully, we do have a special guest today that's going to kind of get into that a little bit. Isn't that right?
That is correct. Hopefully he can help us identify what kind of animosity I have towards you with the show. Fine. Sure. Yes. We do have. Actually, I think you could do a better job in introducing our next guest.
Well, since you did contractually make me record this intro, I may as well play it for everyone. Are you ready?
I've never been readier.
Yeah, well, you turned away from the camera. Stay with me, Bias. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Our special guest today, co-founded Team Builders Plus in 1991 and Take Flight Learning in 2012. He's the author of The Chameleon and co-author of Taking Flight, two books about personality styles. Merrick received his MBA from Drexel University, who recently selected him as the Alumni Entrepreneur of the Millennium of the Year, actually.
That's right.
Under Merrick's leadership, his company has been recognized by the New Jersey Business of the Year. Well, it was recognized as New Jersey Business of the Year. If I could read, it would work out fine. And named one of the fastest growing companies and best places to work in the Philadelphia area. Merrick has worked with more than half of the Fortune 100 companies in the United States and around the world. Please welcome Merrick Rosenberg.
Hey there. Good to be here today with you guys.
Merrick, you were recognized as the New Jersey Business of the Millennium?
I added that.
There's a millennium?
I added that part.
We're working towards the whole millennium. So far the year, but we're building up to that.
Nice. Merrick, it is so awesome to have you on board. How are you doing today, sir?
Oh, I'm doing excellent.
Awesome. So you were up in Buffalo not too long ago. That's how you and JC connected, right?
I was speaking at a Disrupt HR event. Those are always a blast. You get 5 minutes, 20 slides. They change every 15 seconds. You got to be on.
Was that your first time doing that?
No, it was my third.
Third? Aha. So you came back. So the first time wasn't bad enough.
Absolutely.
Now, was that your third time in Buffalo or did you present elsewhere?
No, I've presented elsewhere. I've been in Buffalo many times over the years. But the HR talks were around the country.
Ah, nice. They are fun. Yeah, we have one here in Orlando as well. It's after many years of standing up on stage and talking to people, there's nothing more terrifying than being confined to 15 seconds to a slide and you control none of it, dude.
It's changing, but the slides are moving behind you. If you get off track, it's like a train wreck. The slides just start piling on top of each other.
Oh my God,
Ricky, JC, didn't we see that happen? We've seen that happen a couple times now at a few different disrupts. I feel bad for people when it happens too, you know. But
Yeah, but I feel for them, right? Because I know how hard it is. You know how hard it is. Everybody knows how difficult that is. It'll bring the most seasoned person down to their knees because it's just it really is out there. But so Merrick, so JC, he brought you on. You guys got together over at the last Disrupt HR Buffalo event, and I've been looking you up, man. You got some. So you're the author of two books, The Chameleon and Taking Flight, correct?
Yes.
All right. Want to tell us a little bit about those books or your background? How did you come to get to the point that you said, I need to start putting this in writing?
Sure. Well, way back in 91, started one of the first team building companies in the US. There were literally about a dozen team building companies in the entire country at that point. Just got an MBA and I'm like, discovered team building. And I was like, oh my gosh, this sounds so much fun. Going out there and getting paid to play games with companies. You can't beat that.
Yeah, so, you can't, yeah.
I mean, you're going to get paid to have fun and help people learn and grow. Why not? So okay. I started Team Builders Plus, and a couple years after that, I added personality styles into the mix and started using the DISC model. Used it with more than 100,000 people. Had a blast doing it. But over time, I just started realizing, look, you can teach people about all these letters, the D's and I's and S's and C's, but you go back 6 months later and they don't even remember what they are. So what's the point of that? If you meet someone and they're like, oh, that session was great. I'm a D. Wait, which is the D again? And you're like, oh my God, you're killing me.
Yeah,
I spent all day with you. and so I felt like we needed to reinvent it. We needed to do something fun and different. And I wrote a book, Taking Flight, and it introduced the four birds, which I used to link to the four styles. And from the moment those birds flew into my awareness, it changed everything. So I grew a whole business around it.
There were some people after you spoke that were commenting off the side and even after seeing you present live and look into you, and they're of firm belief that you've invented that DISC model. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, I reinvented the model itself. DISC has been around for a long time. It's funny. Nobody owns DISC. It's just out there in the public domain, so you can do anything you want with it. So I linked the four birds to it. It's funny. I just got back from Nashville the other day and I was the keynote speaker opening up the conference. And every speaker after that was integrating the birds into their talk. They're like, okay, I'm the parrot. I'm the owl. And we'll tell you what they all mean in a moment. But it was a blast. I mean, they're so fun. They're easy. And from there, wrote a few books. And it just started changing the way we do business. Grew a new company out of it, Take Flight Learning. And now we certify trainers around the country and around the world. And it's a blast.
When they get certified, do they receive a post nominal for the end of their name? That's a big thing in HR.
Yeah, they get to say that they're a certified trainer in Taking Flight with DISC, and you know the reality is that there isn't like the DISC certifying organization because nobody, as I said, nobody owns it. So we created a certification, but what was really cool about it was that we created a certification that teaches you how to facilitate it, not just how do you interpret a profile, which is what most certifications do. So it's fun.
Well, I know, because I've been through DISC, I've been through the Myers-Briggs system, and I've been through several styles assessment, and there's the people map. So they all kind of have the same kind of mantra, but I like what you did here. I saw that YouTube video where your organization is explaining how the Taking Flight Learning model works, right? Yep. And then it's what I really liked about it is that you started talking about how everybody goes into this training, everybody's excited, they get to leave their office for at least 4 hours a day, they go through the training, everybody's energized the very next day, everybody's having a blast, but then 6 months later, it kind of dies down. Nobody's talking about it anymore.
Yeah. So,
you kind of want to talk about that gap? Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? Part of the reason for that is that what we have done over time, and we've done this with DISC, we've done it with Myers-Briggs, you have all these words that we strip down to an acronym. We pull the word out so that it makes it easier. Hey, acronyms are easier to remember, right? Well, yeah, you take the words out of something like the Myers-Briggs, and what does the N even stand for? Yeah. What is the S? What's the P? What's the C in DISC? You have to memorize what the styles are, and anything that you're going to memorize can be forgotten. Whereas I'll give you a quick intro to the birds and you'll see how easy it is. You ready? We'll put you on the spot.
All right, sounds good.
Go ahead.
Yeah. All right, here we go. How about if I say to you, this person has the personality of an eagle. what would you say? What do you think the traits of that person would be? What do you picture?
Eagle, very majestic, very in charge, the one people look up to.
Absolutely. Now, do you think they're direct or indirect?
Eagles, if they're majestic, they're in charge, they'll be direct.
Right, exactly.
People. Yeah.
You already get their talons? Their talons are the size of, like, they could pick up, like, coffee cans and footballs. I mean, they have huge talents. Of course they're direct.
They'll pick up a branch that's like 6 feet long to make a nest.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And drop it on you in case you didn't do what they say, which that's what makes them direct. Or they're just slice your neck open.
They're in charge. Right. Exactly. But here's the thing. You already know what an eagle is. If I said to you, tell me the characteristics of the D, it has no inherent meaning.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Intuitive. So you already get it. So how about this? Let's do the next one. So you're a parrot. What comes to mind?
Oh, my God. Talking, won't shut up. Very colorful,
funny,
social,
funny, high energy. Might be part of a group of pirates, right? One speaking right now,
right? You get it already, right? They're funny, they're social, they're talkative, they're outgoing, right? I didn't have to teach it to you. So if I saw you 6 months ago and I say to you, okay, tell me the characteristics of a parrot, you'd already know because you're telling it to me right now. I'm not even teaching it to you.
Okay.
So now picture you've got a dove. Picture what kind of energy do you think that dove has?
To be honest, when I think about a dove, I think about taking a bath. And I think about using that soap, that dove soap, that's very oily. I hate it. See, I like Irish Spring better. But yeah, but dove is very calm, very, very – it's. I don't want to – You know what? Yeah, it doesn't rock the boat.
See, hang on a second, though. I'm a little bit different on that with you. I mean, doves, right? I'm thinking like weddings. I'm thinking funerals. I'm thinking they're getting stuck in the trees, and you just paid $10,000 for like a flock of doves, and where these doves fly off to, you know? But it's like they always seem to be like in a group type, supportive type thing in a way.
That's exactly right. Right, you picture doves. They're in groups. You don't picture like a group of eagles flying in formation. They're solitary.
True.
A dove finds food, and they let out this soft cooing sound. And the message to all the other doves is, "Come, I have found food." The eagle lets out a screech, and the message is, "Back off." So you already get it. Doves are harmonious. They're soft spoken. They're compassionate. They're the peacemaker. It's easy, right? How about an owl? So when you picture an owl, what comes to mind?
Studious, very, very wise.
Lollipops.
yeah, there you go.
Every cartoon owl that has ever been drawn is pictured as wise, right?
Yes,
right.
And it's because they are. They're thoughtful. They're logical. They're analytical. They're taking things in. And so there it is, right? I don't have to tell you the characteristics of the styles. In a training program, the participants tell me. And if you can tell me today, you can tell me 5 years from now. Like you walk up to someone with a Myers-Briggs and say, what style are you? And they say, I'm a E, N, wait, what are they again? And it's gone.
That's true. Okay.
Right? And you can't use it if you don't remember it. So first, the first thing that we do is we make it visual and we make it easy. And I brought the birds to life in the books. The first book, Taking Flight, was like writing a movie. It's one long fable. And then there's a whole section to teach you how to use it in your life. And then The Chameleon is 22 short fables. It was almost like writing an entire season of a sitcom. Some of the episodes were the eagles and parrots. Some were doves and owls. Some were all four. And, of course, the chameleon. The chameleon is the wise, all-knowing guru. Right. The full title is The Chameleon, Life-Changing Wisdom for Anyone Who Has a Personality or Knows Someone Who Does. So,
got it.
That should cover everybody.
It kind of does, right? Because what you're bringing this down to is the four styles are eagles, parrots, doves, and owls.
Yes.
The chameleon comes in, I'm assuming, and how you can incorporate each one of those to best fit your need in any situation at work?
Exactly right. They teach you how to apply the styles in your life. So after each fable, there's a chameleon wisdom section which says, okay, you just learned this lesson of the personality styles. Now, how do you apply it as a parent? Or a manager, or with your spouse. So it teaches you how to apply that lesson in your life. So the book's fun, it's funny, but it really is practical. It teaches you how to use the styles let's face it, I think people like that bite-sized wisdom today. So giving it to them in short, quick fables makes it very accessible.
Hey, I do. I have to ask this one real quick. I don't want to shift too far off it, but it does say on your website that, yes, you've worked with more than half of the Fortune 100 companies in the U.S. and around the world. It also goes on to further say that you've also worked with the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines. Now you've got two Marines on this show with you today. I got to ask, how did that go, working with the Marines, bringing these this style?
I'll tell you. I'll tell you what. I think a lot of people have a paradigm that the armed forces are overwhelmingly eagles because they have this visual of it something aggressive. And actually, it's not like that at all. Overwhelmingly, when we work with any branch of the armed forces, we tend to find there's a lot more owls. That there's a system,
really,
process. You follow the system. There's a structure.
That makes sense.
And they stick with it. And they love it. I mean, the beauty of this is if there's any topic that is infinitely interesting, it's yourself. So it doesn't matter whether I'm talking to a CEO or whether I'm talking to somebody who's entry level. People want to learn about themselves and the people in their life. And so they're inherently into it. Now you just need to make it easy and accessible and practical.
So that was shocking to me because you're right. I would think everybody is all straight up eagle just because everybody's direct, right? And you kind of, I mean, JC and I can only speak about the Marine Corps, but you're right. I think the owl will come first because everything is so process driven. Everything is policy driven. Everything is done by the numbers from the time you wake up to the time you go to sleep. So you're right. After you focus on being an owl, then you get that down. Then you got to focus on being an eagle. I don't know if I've seen any doves in there, man. I'm going to be honest. I don't know if I've seen any doves in the Marine Corps. I mean, have you seen that?
What do you think?
I don't know. Everybody has. For you to be that crazy to go to boot camp and then commit to this for at least 4 years, then another 20.
Hang on, go ahead, JC. Hang on, though. Doves, quote, supportive, good listeners, relationship oriented, considerate, patient, consistent. There's people that are military advisors that stand in those roles, the senior executive advisors, where in that chameleon aspect, they could be more of a eagle or parrot at times, but that role of the dove, that's kind of inherent to a lot of us. Like if you're going to be a good listener and a good speaker, you're a good communicator, you still have to have an aspect of the dove within you, correct?
Yeah. And you know, we find that a lot in law enforcement. A lot of police officers are often owls with secondary dove. They do it because they care about people. They want to help people, but there are rules and a system that you've got to follow. And so sometimes the dove is the secondary style, which is an important point to raise here too. You're not just one. You're a combination of all four.
So you start off in your career in the military or even law enforcement as one spirit bird, but then you end up after 20 years being a completely different one, right? As the dominant. Have you seen that? Have you seen that people start off from one being the dominant and then after their career, their dominant is a different bird?
Absolutely. What happens is our style can change over time because of the role. So I'll give you an example. You get somebody who graduates from college. They're an owl with secondary eagle, and they go into accounting. So right out of the bat, I mean, they're in the weeds. I mean, they're in receipts and data. Yeah. But then fast forward 25 years later, and this person is now the CFO of a 250-person company. Well, what's their view on finances today? It's big picture. It's strategic. It's cash flow, investments, budgets. It's not, let me get the receipts. So over time, that person may now be more of a big picture eagle with secondary owl. They may switch. It's less likely they turned into a parrot, but they, you know, their style can change over time.
So in theory, from a HR perspective or a leadership managerial perspective, if you sat down with your entire staff and you got them to identify, self-identify, or you figured out where they fit in the scheme of things with the bird analogies, right? You could then, in theory, just say, okay, Karen and all the other doves, we're going to keep them in that job and never promote them. And now you've identified who they are.
Well, what happens is you can use the styles to talk about team dynamics, but, you know, style's not a predictor of success, right? Like you could take, look at the role of a CEO. You don't want to stereotype that role and say, well, I'm going to guess CEOs, they're eagles, you know, they're at the top of the food chain, right, they're at the top. But you know what? Okay, there definitely are a lot of CEOs who are eagles. I mean, you got somebody like Steve Jobs. But what about Bill Gates? He's more of an owl. Or somebody like Richard Branson, who's a parrot. Or somebody like Howard Schultz from Starbucks is a dove. You've got four self-made billionaires. That's their style is not going to determine how successful they're going to be, but it will determine how they go about being successful.
I've got a multi-million dollar question for you right here. I've been sitting on this for a very long time, and I'm so thankful that you're here. Okay, we've got the four birds so far, but when we think about things that are relevant in pop culture, all the way down to like even Star Wars, you've got the good side, the light and the dark, you've got the good and the bad. All four of these birds are actually pretty positive. You know, like I do, there's some like turkey vultures out there in your life, and they're just out to like destroy. They're living in the dark side. Is there room for a potential fifth inclusive outside the disc paradigm of the evil factor of the turkey vulture?
Well, here's what happens. It's that we don't need a new bird. We already have them. What happens is you take the four birds and you dial up that energy. You crank it up. And what happens is, when anything you have, any behavior you take to an extreme is going to become your weakness. So take an eagle and you crank up that dial on the eagle. Their assertiveness becomes aggressive. Their confidence becomes arrogance. You take a parrot and dial up optimism and they just become unrealistic and scattered and all over the place. Right? Even the dove, you dial up love. Right? I mean, how can you have too much love? Dial that up too much, and what do you get?
Somebody sexual harassment.
Mothering. They just, right? They're just like, oh my gosh, take it, food, here, eat, bring it home with you. It's just too much. And the owl, quality's great. Dial up the owl. You get the perfectionist who can't make a decision. So all of these styles are really positive, and I'll always try to frame them in the positive, but we have to own up to the fact that if you're taking your style to an extreme, it's going to come back to get you.
Personal responsibility at the end of the day.
Yeah, you got to be accountable for your behaviors. Use your personality to serve you instead of to offend other people by overusing it.
Ricky, do you have to deal with dialing up the love a little bit too much at work sometimes, brother?
Here we go. The love. Guys, say it. Love contracts.
Love contracts at work. We did a show on love contracts not too long ago where people, when they get into that intimate relationship, they need to, you know, get that on documentation within the files. So then we incorporated the love contract.
My guess
music.
Is whoever you had on the show is probably a dove owl. You got the love from the dove and the contract from the owl.
I can see myself doing employer relations investigations and pegging people. All right, so the eagle came in, right, and touched the booty of the dove, and then the owl came in. You know what? You okay, so Merrick, you. Your entire your company, their sole goal is to go to organizations and kind of teach the leaders about the different personality styles and how they employ that in every day, right? So everyone from the CEO on down. So again, like I was saying in the from your previous YouTube video, I really liked how you connected those dots to make it so people don't forget. But have you ever had a situation to where somebody calls you back, a client calls you back a year later and saying that, thank you for coming in. This actually worked so well that it's actually destroying the relationship within everybody in the organization. For example, if you are really good at showing people what the most dominant style is, like so-and-so is a parrot, so-and-so is an eagle. Has there been a situation that people get into arguments and they start calling people those names? Well, you can't talk to Karen. She's a freaking parrot. You can't talk to Mike. He's a freaking owl. So now you start segregating people, and now we're back in 1955.
All right, there's a couple of things there. First of all, I say, look, you can't weaponize the birds, right? You can't turn them into a weapon. They're a tool. Right. You can't. So I even talk about this in the program. I say, look, you can't say, ha, I'm an owl. I'm allowed to ask questions. I'm an eagle. I'm allowed to be blunt. You can't do that. We actually talk about that right in the session itself. But it becomes a very powerful tool. Let's say you're an owl and a parrot walks into your office and they say, all right, I got an amazing idea. Let's do this. And they're bubbling over with enthusiasm. They have no detail. All they have is a 10,000 foot idea. And that owl might look at them and say, I'm an owl. And then what that conveys in 1 second is, I need more detail. I need more information. So they're not using it as a weapon. They're using it as a tool to say, hey, me saying, wait, I'm an owl, I need more. As a parrot, I might look at that and say, you know, you're right. Okay, let me walk you through the idea instead of just try to sell you on it with my enthusiasm. So if you use it as a tool, not a weapon, it's incredibly valuable. It actually becomes the language of the culture.
But isn't – so who has the ultimate response? I think I know the answer to this, but I just want to hear from you. Who has the ultimate responsibility to know what each trait is? So if the owl – I'm sorry, if the parrot comes into the owl's office all excited and the owl is more reserved and logical and wise, shouldn't the owl – actually, I guess that's where the chameleon comes into play, right? Shouldn't the owl say, wait a minute, this is not how I'm used to listen, but I got to be flexible – and this is how the parrot communicates. So in order for me to make sure I create a good line of communication for the parrot, shouldn't me as the chameleon turn my listening style to that parrot style?
Absolutely. I'll give you an example. And you're right on track, is that it's the only behavior you can change is yourself. You can't expect other people to adapt to you. So I'll give you an example. I was working with an organization, big organization, they have about 2,000 people, mortgage company, massive call center, talking to the chief information officer, the CIO, who happens to be an eagle. And he was telling me, look, when our system goes down, it costs us between $5,000 and $10,000 a minute in revenue because you've got all these people that they're paying. First of all, they're paying them and then they're not making any money.
Yeah.
So when their system goes down, it's a problem.
Yep.
So he's in a staff meeting. He's across their campus, got a couple buildings. You know, he keeps feeling his phone buzzing in his pocket. He decides to peek at it. It's like code one, red alert, system down. He's an eagle. In like 2.3 seconds, he's a missile headed towards IT. He walks into IT. So by the way, just what do you think? What style do you think people are in IT?
In IT?
Yeah.
Well, you kind of have to be an owl, right?
Right. You get it. So he walks in to a whole room of owls. And what does he see? Do you think he sees a crisis? What do you think? Are they running around all like crazy, or are they, each of them is focused, looking at what they're doing? What do you think is playing out in that room?
So he walks in. He sees everybody not taking, through his eyes, not taking it as seriously as he is.
You're on it.
Or maybe the how they're reacting to what's happening is not properly calibrated to how he would see it as an eagle.
That's exactly right. And so he walks in, sees people sitting at their desks, and he's like, do you not understand the magnitude of this situation? He's like, you go here, you go there, you take this, you take that. And he's standing back and he's like, good thing I'm here. Now he's created chaos and stress. Right now, you could say to him, look, before you walk in that room, you could run over there, but you got to dial it down, walk in calmly, because I can tell you, it's not that those folks aren't stressed out. They are having a very rich inner experience. Those owls are freaking out. You may not see it, but it's happening. And he needs to dial it down, walk in calmly, and say, okay, tell me what's happening. But I'll tell you what. If I were to turn to one of his senior staff members, I will bet you they could calm him down in about 2 seconds. In other words, if one of his team members walked up to him and said, we know this is a crisis. We're focused. We've divided up roles and responsibilities. Give us 3 minutes and we will report back to you. What would he say?
He'll be good because it checked his boxes of urgency. He'll be good. Yeah.
Right. But he kept going and going and going because he didn't feel the urgency. So who's responsible is your original question. He's responsible for his own behavior. Dial it down. But if you don't want to be managed that way, guess what? You could go to your manager, communicate to them how they want to be communicated to. Guess what happens? You get treated how you want to be treated. So we're ultimately only accountable for our own behaviors. But if everybody knows the styles, everybody can be used.
So so that's spot on, right? Because that to me answers my question more than what I even thought. Because you're right. It's once you, how you respond to a situation, if you are not self-aware about how you communicate and you're not aware about how the rest of your team communicates, that can easily happen. And then that create a lot more drama, a lot more issue than what needs to happen in a situation where people need to be calm.
Yeah, you hit the big word. I go into companies 6 months, 12 months later, and that the one word we hear all the time is, it's like the drama is gone. And that's exactly what happens when you understand each other. You start treating each other the way you want to be treated, and you stop judging each other, start accepting each other, and the drama just goes away.
You were very clear about that, and I want to reemphasize that. It's not, and this is also a quote from meetings.net that did an article and a piece on you where it was stated, quote, treating people the way you want to be treated, rather treating people the way they want to be treated.
Right.
Changing that paradigm, shifting that focus. That's huge when you come into that conscious reality of it.
Yeah. I always say, look, the golden rule, treat others the way you want to be treated, is valid for virtues like kindness and respect and compassion.
Yeah.
But in terms of personality, you need to treat them the way they want to be treated. If I'm talking to an owl and I'm delegating work to an owl, I don't just walk in their office as a parrot, which I am, and say, you are amazing. You got this. Here's your goal. Tell me if you need any help. Because the owl's like, whoa, what is going on? I need to walk into that owl's office despite my parrot and say, here's what I'm looking for. Let me walk you through the process. Let me answer your questions. I need to treat you how you want to be treated. It'll take some energy on my part, but it's better that it takes some energy on my part than it takes some energy on that person who's now delegated in a way that stresses them out.
So keeping this paradigm in mind with the overarching philosophy, as well as the four different styles here. Let's say you are that owl, and now you're in that time in your career where you're looking for a mentor, where you're looking to grow your skill set, someone that you could turn to maybe learn a little bit more from. Do you focus on your weaknesses to try to expand in that sector? How would be the best way to go about finding a long-term mentor if you're an owl?
Right. I would say the challenge is that if you try to change your style, it's just going to stress you out.
Okay.
And that owl doesn't need to become a parrot. So, I'm going to find a parrot to teach me parrot behaviors.
Right.
That owl, if they are self-aware, and the happiest, most successful people are the most self-aware people because they find a role that fits who they are. And so I would actually say, find someone who can help you be the highest version of yourself. And like, you don't need to find a parrot to turn you into parrot. That's something different. You need to find somebody who can help you to become the best you. And that's probably someone who understands you in a very deep and meaningful way. Maybe you're an owl and earlier in your career, you had a hard time with decision making because you needed every bit of data to be able to make that decision. But maybe if you talk to another owl who's a mentor and they say, look, you need to seek excellence, not perfection. And they give them what they learned on their path as opposed to trying to change them into something new. So I would try to find somebody who's going to help you be the highest version of you. And that's going to be the person who gets you in a very deep way.
So along those lines, so I come from the HR world. I mean, heck, the show is called HR Talk, right? So I've got to bring it back to that. So have you ever been in a situation where you've consulted with a team and the first person you meet is the leader of that team and that senior leader, that executive, and you've seen that within a day in talking to them, you've noticed that the entire team that leader put together is all owls or all doves or all eagles or all parrots? If you've seen that, number one, number two, how do you, I mean, actually, you know what, before I even anticipate what you're going to say, what would you say to that person who's got all one kind of bird on that team that they put together?
Well, first of all, there's power in diversity.
Okay.
So when you're missing out on styles, you're missing something, right? The eagles keep you focused. The parrots add energy and excitement. The doves keep the group together and harmonious. The owls have systems to make sure that you're focused on quality. So you are missing something. But here's the thing. You may, depending upon the job that you're talking about, it may be perfectly acceptable to have a team of all one style. Like, in other words, I walked into an engineering firm in Silicon Valley recently. It was about 75 people. How many parrots do you think were in that room? You're talking to the only one.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah.
That was it. But these are engineers, and that role tends to draw that job. And so just, you know, I'll give you another example. I was working with a group of pharmaceutical reps. Almost every person in that group was a parrot, and that's okay. So sometimes it's okay if you have a lot of one style, because that's what the role tends to draw. Now, the it goes bad when you didn't need one particular style. But as a manager, you hired everyone in your own image.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
Which that happens a lot, right?
Oh, yeah. I worked with a group recently, and a senior manager was hired his whole team. He's like, yeah, I built this team. And if you look at their graph on their profile, it was looked exactly like his. And he's like, yeah, I hired all these people. I'm like, you don't say. You hired 10 versions of you. How's that working out for you?
But doesn't that get difficult? Because going along those lines, if you got somebody that keeps hiring somebody that's just like them, they go through your process. They're like, holy shit, he's right. Merrick is 100% right. I have to find somebody who's different that can complement the team. But then let's take that example of the people in Silicon Valley. They're all owls. They're all engineers. They all have a specific process. But then you're interviewing this other person to come on the team. Perfect credentials, has come from a great school, great experience, but they're a high parrot, right? Yeah. And then you put them with the team, wouldn't that high parrot disrupt the mojo of all the owls on the team because you're right. Putting them two different people together?
Yeah. So what I always say is, look, you've got somebody who's different. Whoever is different, that the which one doesn't belong, you know, from like Sesame Street, that's your innovator. That's the person who's going to look at the situation from a different perspective, whichever that one person whose style differs from everyone else. If you screen out that person because they're different, you've just screened out innovation. I worked with a group recently that was like that. It was a group of almost all owls, and they had one parrot. And every time they went to do their client presentations, guess who did it? The parrot. Right. And the parrot loved creating the PowerPoint, got up there and was energetic. And they were like, thank God you're here. For years, we had to go do these and we were exhausted. We sucked the life out of what we created. And, you know, it's that expression, you know, if you left describing sushi up to an engineer, they would describe it as cold, dead, sliced fish. Right. I mean, having a parrot in there is going to make it sound exciting. And
I love that. I mean, describe fried chicken. It's like, you know, dead chicken that's tortured. I mean, it's dead, but yeah, I get it.
So you're right. If you screen out that person, you lose the power of their style. But here's the thing. If you bring them on board, you have to honor the fact that they're different and not get annoyed by the fact that they're offering different solutions or a different approach, because you may feel like they're sidetracking you, but actually they're probably they're complimenting you. They're sharing ideas that are just different and may even be better.
Prior to even thinking about some of these thoughts, someone may take a look at these different analogies, these different bird types, these different personality types, and they may think to themselves in their head, in their own mind, I am that eagle. And they get to the root of it and they discover that they truly are a parrot. And maybe their secondary is owl. And their third is eagle, and that's what they pride themselves on, and they won't let that go.
Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned the self-awareness. You've talked about that self-awareness. When you're trying to move that needle from A to B after the conscious realization that the personality type that you think you are isn't exactly who you are, do you currently have any support groups for people that are struggling with that? I mean, like, how do you overcome that?
You know what's funny about that is that people are actually very self-aware about their personality style. It is rare that I find people that look at their report, you know, they go online, take an assessment, they get a profile, and they say, this is totally not me. What I would tell you is that people tend to be very self-aware about their personality. They tend to lack complete awareness about their level of performance. In other words, when I walk into an audience and I show this to crowds, I often stand in front of a group and I'll ask this question. I say, all right, I'll do this at a conference. I'll say, raise your hand if you genuinely believe that you are in the top 25% of performers in your organization. Well, how many hands do you think go up? What do you think? Either I have only met the top 25th percentile of employees in my career, or some people are very not self-aware.
Merrick, right? You're that good, man. You're that good. That's the only people you attract, the top 20%. Right.
We only attract the top 25%. But people are very self-aware about their profile. I had one woman recently. She gets her report, and this is so rare. That's why it stood out for me. I handed her a report, and she looks at me, and she goes, I am not an eagle. Really? Okay. Well, let's see. And so everybody got their report, and she said that to me. And I said, you know, it was a big group who knew her. And I said, well, just out of curiosity, do you want to ask the group? Let's see what do you think? And she's like, let's ask them. I said, all right, what style do you think she is? Raise your hand if you think she's a dove. Not a hand goes up. Parrot. Not a hand goes up. Owl. Not a hand goes up. Eagle. The whole room. And then she goes, I disagree. So, but you know what? That's pretty rare. Most people actually read the report and they're like, yeah, wow, this is incredible. It's almost like, have you been following me around? Have you spoken to my wife?
Well, that's JC asked a question that I wanted to ask, because there are some people who think they're self-aware, but it's more of who they wish they were, right? And how do you have a conversation with them to kind of talk them down? Because even with that example, everybody raised their hand saying that she's an eagle. Actually, how she told you she wasn't an eagle was very eagle-esque.
Yeah.
How do you convince them? How do you connect with them to let them know who they really are?
Well, here's the first of all, I would say part of the reason we encounter that rarely is because the assessment itself factors out something which is called social desirability. It factors out what you want to be or think you should be. And here, I'll give you an example. You have to pick words, whether you're most or least. If you're a parrot, do you think you would ever pick least enthusiastic? Out of a group of words like direct, results driven, compassionate. You'd never pick that word.
Yeah.
No matter what's happening in your day. If you're a dove, would you ever pick the word least compassionate? No. You would just never pick it. And so that's why we encounter it rarely, because you're just drawn to certain words and repelled by others. Now, if I do encounter someone that is resistant and doesn't agree with their graph, my response, if they say to me, I don't necessarily agree with this, you know what my response is? Cool. All right. Cool. That's fine. Yeah, sounds good. Right? Yeah. Because for me, I'm not going to argue with you. But because for me, yes, it's about self-awareness, but overwhelmingly, it's about how are you impacting others in your life? How are you communicating to other people? And almost all the time when most people read that report, even if they don't agree with it at first, by the time we get to the end of the day, the end of that training program, they're like, wow, that really is me. And if they end the day and they still don't agree, I say, okay, bring it home. Share it with somebody. See what they think. But in the end, don't worry about your graph. It's not about a graph. It's about how you treat the people in your life.
And ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to HR Talk. We have Merrick Rosenberg on. He's the thought leader, entrepreneur, author, keynote speaker, specializing in team building, leadership development, utilizing that DISC personality type style to build better relationships and creating engaging work environments. Two books currently on Amazon as of right now. We're talking about actually four from what we could see, right? We've got Taking Flight. We've got The Chameleon, Alza El Vuelo, and another version of Taking Flight, the Kindle edition right there. It looks like there's a Spanish version tucked in there.
Abuelo?
Yeah, it's in
Grandfather? Oh, all right. Oh, Flight. Flight or Grandfather? Right. Abuela? I don't know. I'm going to look it up now.
Yeah, Taking Flight. So Taking Flight's in seven languages around the world.
Nice. Okay.
So these are also available as audiobooks too, or just the Kindle edition?
The Chameleon is.
Okay.
Yeah, The Chameleon is. I had some fun with that. I had hired someone to do all the character voices in the fables themselves, and I read The Chameleon with those sections. So that was a blast.
Absolutely love when authors step up to the plate and read their own books. It brings that extra layer of persona and genuine nature of what you're trying to get behind some of the words right there. Can we foresee maybe a movie, a cartoon series, a animated something, shorts, anything online based off these books in the near future?
Yeah, I've always envisioned doing that. Actually, my next book is really going to take it to a whole different place to teach people the styles in a new way. So I'm going to teach folks how to understand the personality styles through the lens of looking at presidents and past presidents. And it's all about how you can predict who's going to be the next president of the United States. So,
all right. So this is, I'm so thankful that you made the transition, because this is something we talked about off air over at the conference when I met you. Fantastic book in the works. Let's dissect that just a little bit. I know you might be limited on how much you could tell us right now, but if you could just bring anything to the table about that, it'd be appreciated. Rick, sure. Ricky, keep your ears open. It's coming like a freight train, brother.
I got you.
So the book is coming out later this spring. It's going to be called Personality Wins, who will take the White House and how we know. And I had a theory that I could use the personality styles, four birds, to predict who is going to win a presidential election. And so I worked my way back and I said, well, let's see if the theory holds true. And I was like, all right, well, it held true with Trump versus Hillary, Obama versus Romney, Obama versus Kane, the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, 60s, 50s, 40s, 30s. I would have accurately predicted 22 straight elections all the way back to 1932, FDR versus Herbert Hoover, just based on personality alone. No other variable, nothing else.
So hold on. Based on the personality of the candidates.
Yes.
But wouldn't you have to know the personality of the voters?
Sure. It's the personality of the. So what I did is I worked through and I looked at the personality of the candidates.
Uh-huh.
Watched videos, read books.
Yeah.
And it's not hard to figure out their personalities. I mean, I'll give you an example. If I were to say to you, Mother Teresa, what style do you think out of the four birds? Eagle, parrot,
dove? Dove and owl.
Eagle.
Right?
Mother Teresa?
No, stop
Eagle?
It. Yeah, she was direct. She went in there like she attacked.
You know what's funny?
Eat this food.
You're both right. She's actually the dove and eagle. You see the dove because she's very compassionate, but when she went out to get money, you'd stay out of her way because she was so blunt. How about somebody like a Warren Buffett? Which style do you think
he is? He's an owl. Exactly. I know he's an owl. Yeah.
So here's the thing. When somebody says to me, well, how did you figure out the styles of the presidents? You just did it.
Yeah.
Right? You learned the styles a few minutes ago and you're already doing it. So it was actually very easy for me to go back and look at Jimmy Carter and see his dove style.
Yeah.
Or Bill Clinton and see that booming parrot. And so I went back in time and I looked at all of the presidents versus the candidates. And what I found was that in every election, the bigger personalities beat those more reserved personalities on a big stage. From the general election, eagles and parrots always beat doves and owls. And it happened 22 straight times in a row.
So if you think of Carter the first time in, and then you think of Carter going up against Reagan, there's a bit of a change there, though, right?
Right. So you take Carter, who's a dove, goes against Ford, who's also a dove. A dove is winning that election. But then you put Carter against Reagan, and Reagan's parrot energy just swallowed him up. Same thing happened George H.W. Bush. Well, George H.W. Bush, owl, goes against Dukakis, owl. Huh. Then you put him against Bill Clinton, parrot wins. And it happened over and over and over again. And what's fascinating is the pivot point was 1932. Prior to 1932, overwhelmingly, owls and doves were president. The first six owls were president. After that, we had a parrot and then an eagle. And then after that, 15 of the next 19 presidents were doves or owls. So what you saw was prior to that point, the only place we saw these folks was in writing. And owls and doves seemed very thoughtful in writing. But now that we see them in TV, for FDR on the radio, their access in social media, those big personalities win every day.
So if it's in print, doves and owls win. If people can see or hear, eagles and parrots win.
Yes. And today we see and hear everything.
Yeah.
But you have presidents like Benjamin Harrison, who was called the human iceberg. How would that win today, right? Calvin Coolidge, the silent cow. Would the silent cow win the presidency today?
No, you're probably not.
Yeah.
But you take a look at Reagan and JFK and FDR and Bill Clinton and Obama's charisma and magnetism, and they just kept winning. And it happens every time.
Guys, so that means we're in trouble for 2020 when Kanye West puts his hat in the ring. So we're in trouble then. Oh, man. So what? That is really – so if I can ask, if you can share, finally share. If not, I completely get it. How did you come up with – how did you get to that point that you went from let me go ahead and teach leaders how to connect with their team and how to be self-aware with their personality style to predicting who the next president's going to be?
You know, what happened was I always use presidents as examples when I talk about let's practice people reading. Like I'd name some presidents and I'd say Ronald Reagan, parrot, You know, Lyndon Johnson, he's an eagle. Kennedy, Parrott, FDR, you know, and I always use the presidents to practice talking about their styles, and can you figure out the styles of the people you know? And then I just started thinking about, wow, there's lots of owls and parrots. I wonder if that's always the case. And I started going back in time, and I did a little research, and you see people like, look, Lincoln was a dove. I mean, during, you know, one of the bloodiest period in U.S. history, or all of a sudden we've got this dove leading our country. Yeah, and his goal was to keep the union together, to not let us fragment, but to keep us as one. Probably he was the only person at that time. If he was not the president as a dove, we would have two different countries on this continent.
Wow. So if I could shift real quick, if you was to get access to the personality of, let's say, the head coach of the Bills and the personality of each player on the starting roster, and the same thing for the opposing team, are you able to predict who's going to win the next game?
I don't think you're able to predict who's going to win because there's other variables like talent.
Yeah.
And I always say, look, personality doesn't determine how successful you're going to be. It determines how you're going to go about being successful.
It does for presidents. Right?
No, here's the thing. It determines who's electable. It doesn't determine who's going to be likable.
Got it. Okay. Who's going to be good? Likable, though, right? Because if he's electable, it's likable, right?
No, they're two different things.
No? Okay.
Yeah. You have somebody like, Jimmy Carter is very likable. But, you know, a lot of people might debate how effective he was as president. You have some, well, and here's what's interesting. You take a look at Gallup's polls that look at approval ratings. Overwhelmingly, Eagles always tend to win, especially if they're going against something else. Uh-huh. But then if you look at approval ratings, some of the lowest approval ratings in history are people like Truman, LBJ, and George W. Bush, and they all happen to be Eagles. Yeah. The highest four approval ratings in history, I'll take him out of the list for a second. The highest approval ratings over history were Clinton, Reagan, JFK, and FDR, and they were all parrot-eagle combinations. Top four had the parrot in there because parrots are fun and likable, but bottom three, except for Nixon, what he was for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
For Nixon, the bottom, you get the lowest end of the continuum were eagles, meaning eagles are electable, but they're not as likable once you have them.
So Johnson was an eagle?
Oh, yeah. He was an eagle.
He looked like an eagle.
Yeah.
Physically.
Right. Well, what's funny is I put a lot of fun stories in the book to show you how their style played out. Like, there's this great example of Johnson walks by one of his staff members' desks. And as an eagle, he just very blunt and direct. And he looks at the desk and he goes, I hope your mind isn't as messy as your desk is. So, of course, the president told you that your desk is messy. Person cleans up their desk. Next day walks by their desk and says, Johnson looks at the desk and says, I hope your mind isn't as empty as your desk is. You know, you just weren't going to win with the eagle.
I quit.
Very blunt.
Eisenhower, if we go to Eisenhower, I have to go there because there are some conspiracy theorists out there, the whole military-industrial complex aspect of things, right? You know, and some of the things Eisenhower may have said during his term or on the back end of his term, et cetera. Eisenhower, bit of an eagle.
Yeah, Eisenhower was very owl-like. He was very dove-like, you know, be like Ike, you know, like him, you know. Mm-hmm. He was just so personable. He did so many things because he really cared about the troops. He was very soft-spoken. He was actually way more reserved. Before D-Day, he writes this letter that basically says, look, if this doesn't work, it's all on me. I'm accountable. You know, don't blame anyone else but me. And that's like that owl dove. You know, can you picture Trump writing a letter if it, you know, they have this big event and it doesn't work? And he goes, it's all me. No one else. No one. Don't look to anybody else. I take total responsibility. It's all my fault.
Nope.
You know, eagles externalize that blame, and doves and owls internalize it. Eisenhower was very much an owl dove kind of.
All eagles, though, right? So all eagles externalize as blame?
They
not all of them.
Externalize stress. It doesn't mean they will blame other people. But if you have an instinctive tendency, that's what probably they did as a child. They may have unlearned it, but,
gotcha. But people
more have that tendency for sure.
Have you ever had anybody give you a call and say, you know what, Merrick? Thank you for coming in. to my office and doing this training. And you ask, oh, so it worked at work. No, actually, nobody's using it at work. But damn it, you saved my marriage.
Yeah.
You saved my marriage, and yep. Now I can communicate better with my spouse.
I will tell you, it's funny. You know, I live in corporate America, going into running training programs, running conferences, mm-hmm. speaking at events. And yet I would say I get more emails from people. I get more letters when I encounter people 6 months later after they've read the book or after they've gone through a program. I actually hear way more comments about how it changed their life, how it changed their relationships with their spouse or their kids, even more so than at work. And that's where we're going and teaching this stuff, because the reality is your personality plays out everywhere you go. And if you really get it, you're going to apply it throughout your life.
It does, because it's so for the school I teach for at night, I teach for the Masters of HR program. And then I have a couple of years ago or a year ago, I had two students that were a couple. You know, they were a couple in class, and I teach something similar, not as enjoyable as you, because you have the owls attached to it and the eagles. I just say, look, you're either direct, you're either free spirit, you're conservative. Considerate or systematic, right? Which kind of coincides with sure. what you're talking about. So then I put an activity together for the couple, because the couple were claiming the other one was something they're not. So I'm like, okay, cool. So I split them up and I had them plan a vacation. But one person planned it over there, another person planned it over here. They learned a lot that day, because one part of the couple was like, ah, let's just go on Priceline, order something, and we just go. The other one had an Excel spreadsheet about what they're going to do each and every hour of the day, right?
Yes.
And I asked the class, all right, who's who? This person is free spirit. That person is systematic. And they both denied it, right? And then they argued, it's okay. I don't know if they're married or not, but I just do know that they learned a lot that day about how to plan a vacation. But I've done it in other areas. And I did have people come to me and say, look, I don't know how I could use it at work, but damn it, I cannot talk to my husband. I cannot talk to my wife.
We get it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. I love that, because, you know, I always kind of joke around and I say, look, I don't care how incredible safety training is. You're not going home and around the kitchen table at dinner saying, I had the best safety training. And then you're going to spend the next hour talking about it. But I've had people say to me, we've gotten in the car, we've turned on the audiobook, we listened to one of the fables, we turned it off, and as an entire family talked about it for the next 20 minutes, then played another one, talked about it, that it became conversation and became language in their family. We've been talking about it with children. And it's so simple, but so powerful. And that's the beauty of it.
Have you thought about a children's book?
Yeah, you know, I do. I actually have a children's book in my head. I just got it downloaded and actually into my computer. But what's funny, the fables in The Chameleon, I've had many parents who have said, you know, you could read the fables to a child. Like, I wrote them so they're so simple, they're so easy. They wouldn't necessarily read the Chameleon Wisdom section, because that's how you apply it at work or as a parent or spouse. But the fables themselves, actually, kids get it. They're so simple. I taught it to my kids when they were six and they completely get it.
Well, that's the thing, right? I haven't read the books. I'm actually about to order it on Amazon here in a bit, because I'm really interested in how these fables turn out. But I really think if you put a children's book out there and you're good at communicating and with the kids about how their communication style is like and how to communicate to others, you might put yourself out of business in 20 years, man. Because if all these kids know how to communicate, nobody's going
to
need
you. Want everyone to learn it. Well, look, I always say we work with a lot of universities, a lot of colleges that are actually building the books and the profiles into their orientation program. Orientations. Because look, if they learned it then, it would be incredibly powerful. In fact, I have a student version of both Taking Flight and a student version of The Chameleon. So after you read each fable for The Chameleon, you can get the student version, which teaches you how to apply this lesson at school, right? You know, as someone who's a high school or college student. And so I agree with you. If we could teach it to people earlier, it would make their lives so much easier.
Yeah, it would, you know, especially now that all these different generations have labels on them. and how to deal with millennials, how to deal with baby boomers, how to deal with Gen Xers, whatever it is. And I don't even know what the next one is. I think the earlier they realize how their communication style fits in corporate America. I was reading that article on Forbes where they interviewed you, asking you questions about what advice would you give somebody out there graduating college and looking to go into corporate America, and your advice was spot on. You told the interviewer that the best thing to do is to figure out who they are first, how to identify what other people are really quick, and then in the interview process, start converting, not converting, but just adjusting your style in the way that gets them excited. Because if they're excited about you, you're kind of training them how to communicate with you, right?
Yeah. Well, think about it. You walk into an interview. You do all this practice for the interview. You've prepared all the answers to all the commonly asked interviewing questions. And then what trips you up? Well, it's not the questions. It's the interviewer.
Yeah.
You're a dove. And now you're being just blasted with questions by an eagle. And you're like, whoa. Or you're a parrot. And the owl wants, you know, a high level of detail. So what I tell folks, I say, here, you want to master the interview process? Take all the standard interview questions. Take the top 10. These are things I'm probably going to be asked in some form, and answer each one 4 different ways. Answer it as an eagle, a parrot, a dove, an owl. And when you walk into that interview, you're not only going to be prepared with the questions, you're going to be prepared for the person. And now they will connect with you. You'll connect with them.
Excellent advice. I cannot agree more, Merrick. It's a lot of people tend to focus, you're right, on the question and the answer and the question, and they take no time to figure out how to answer that in the way that the interviewer takes it as an acceptable answer. Something, because yeah, there's the right answer that you have to give, but then there's the connection that you have to have for them to get excited about you in connection with the answer, not just the answer and nothing about you.
Yeah,
because you can give great answers, right, but if they don't have any chemistry with you, I'm like, God, it's going to be boring. I got a bunch of eagles here. I'm not going to bring an owl in here unless you know how that owl is going to make the team better.
Yeah. And you know, it's like you're selling yourself. And in a sales situation, you know, a lot of sales folks will lose the deal. They don't close the sale, but they don't realize, you know, you might blame it. Let's say a car salesperson, somebody doesn't go with your organization. They go buy a car from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. You have no idea that the reason they are not buying that car from you is because of you, that they didn't connect with you, that you as the salesperson needed to connect with your customer. And if you are trying to sell yourself in an interview situation, you need to connect with the person who's that hiring manager.
Yeah.
You have no idea how spot on that is. I mean, it's really
spot
on. Oh,
wait a minute, Rick. I think he does. I think he knows.
It's no, from my perspective, what I'm about to tell him. Good Lord, it's stay over there, eagle, parrot. All right, so he about what 8 years ago, I was buying a car and I was having such a hard time with the dealer because I just wanted the price point just wasn't there. I just wanted $1,000 more off, and it didn't work. It didn't work at all. He wouldn't budge, and then I found out how much he loved Red Lobster. Well, I used to work at Darden Restaurant back then.
Oh man,
seriously. I went back to the office. I got him $100 gift card to Red Lobster because he loved those Cheddar Bay biscuits. Came back like a week later after he gave me a call. Hey, you still interested? I'm like, are you still going to knock down that price? No. You know what? I'm going to swing by and give something to you. Gave him that $100 gift card. That was what was needed to knock down $1,000 because that was really, really what checked that box for him.
Yeah,
so, which is
–
it's yeah, with $100 worth of gift cards, I knocked on $1,000 more.
Right.
So I found out what the motivation was. But for me, that rang true because I'm like, holy shit, I really got a good deal with $100 gift card to Red Lobster. So yeah, you're right. This would help you anywhere. This would help you with your relationships, buying a car, buying a house, negotiating a salary. So have you worked with people on how to negotiate salaries post offer?
I haven't really worked with people from a salary perspective, a negotiation perspective, but I've worked with so many people just one-on-one coaching, talking to them about, you know, understanding what would bring happiness to your life. Like, what type of job would you like? And how do you show up in the interview so that you can get that job and be on a path that makes it happen? But you know, look, you can certainly use it in negotiations. It personality plays out in everything we do. It's a lens that you get to look at the world through. And when you look at the world through that lens, it makes so much sense. You just understand things and you're like, so that's why they did this. And then all that judgment goes away.
So you've been doing this for almost 30 years now, right?
I learned the personality styles in 94. And that was when it began. I always say, you know, I learned the personality styles in 1994, but I got married in 1991. So those first 3 years were harder. After 3 years, after I learned them, I'm like,
that's the problem. told you. So let me ask you this. So you started this pre-internet era.
Yes.
And now the internet started getting more and more relevant in the world as the decades go on. As the decades go on, technology it advances farther by the day today than what it did 30, 40, 50 years ago.
And real quick, Rick, let's give credit where credit's due. The internet's invented by Al Gore, renamed by George Bush. That's fine.
That is true. That is exactly what happens.
Equal opportunity.
He has a contract that he has to say that every time the internet is mentioned. So my question to you is, with how technology is evolving today, and it's evolving at a scary pace, do you have any concerns with the emergence of artificial intelligence where maybe the personality assessment would not be as valuable to a robot as it would to a human being?
Well, especially in that HRIS automated tracking system, the filtering of humans from that automated perspective, man. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. AI is just, it's going to appear in places where you're not even going to know. You're not even going to realize you're talking to AI. Yeah. And, you know, I think first and foremost, when you talk to a customer service rep because you have an issue, you know, years ago, you got right to that person. Now you work your way through six different auto prompts that get it so close to that what you need that by the time you get there, the computer may actually answer your question. Or maybe they bring you to a person who just gives you a 20-second answer because they've narrowed it down so significantly.
Right.
And our loyalty to organizations is based on that connection that we have with them. And we're losing a lot of that connection. You know, you walk into some stores and, you know, a salad store by me, you walk in, you don't ever talk to a person. You place your order at a kiosk, you grab your salad at the end of the line. And, you know, there's no, hey, how are you? How's your day going today? Yeah. So it's really getting to that space where it's we're losing the connection.
It'll probably get to a space and then it blows up and then it comes back to normal. I mean, we kind of saw that with the dot-com boom in the late 90s, early 2000s, where eBay was the biggest thing ever. Everybody and the mother had an eBay store, right? But then it started that bubble bust, and then you started going to brick and mortar stores, and now Amazon came in and they're completely changing how the game works. But now Amazon has smart stores now. I believe they have a store in Seattle near their corporate headquarters that you just walk in, grab something, leave, and it knows the store knows what you grab, it knows how much it is, it charges you for it, and walks out the store without a human being present.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is that yes, AI is taking over, technology is taking over, but it's cyclical. Like the real estate business, like everything else, at some point it's going to explode and then come back down. I guess my question for you is, do you see it getting so much farther, AI-wise, so much farther that it's going to go ahead and explode and then come back and people are actually going to have conversations with each other as a human being? Or is it just going to completely evolve year after year after year? Where do you see it?
Yeah, I think it's going to keep evolving, but I think there will always be those niche companies that – their brand is based on their connection to their people, and they won't move to AI. They'll maintain that human relationship and contact.
They have to get it's look, man, I was calling Verizon Wireless the other day and I got so frustrated. I had to go through 15 prompts before I could finally get to somebody. But then I start seeing some other organizations that instead of growing bigger to get a larger breadth of audience, they stay boutique and they have no IVR. They just talk to somebody because that's what people want. But I don't know if it's the baby boomers and Gen Xers that is still catering to those folks. I don't know what the millennials and what I don't know what the other label is, but I don't know what they would like. I know for me, I want to talk to somebody. I don't want to talk to a computer. And so are you ready for that? Are you ready to connect with that next workforce and how they're – because I guess what I'm trying to see, how are you going to address the workers in 15 years?
Yeah. Well, what's happening already is that we have a very large generation leaving the workforce. You have baby boomers who are leaving the workforce. They took tons of these personality assessments, and they're taking this knowledge with them. New generation, yeah. Millennials, Gen Z, or whatever we're calling this, the next generation coming in, that they don't have this knowledge, and they want it. And I think anything that is all that's centered on increasing self-awareness is always going to be valuable for people. Is it true that this next generation is much more likely to text you than to pick up the phone and call you? Yes, but there's just still going to be something about the importance of learning about yourself and how to relate to others, which will always be there.
Gentlemen, we are at that time in the show where I would like to just put this out there. Either of you could accept. If anyone denies, we will not head down this path. I have four current event articles. I'd like to toss these out here for immediate discussion, things that were published this past week. Merrick, are you in?
Let's do it.
Good to go. Ricky?
I am in, definitely.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is coming directly from the Sydney Morning Herald. It's an opinion piece put together by Gary Martin. At work, introverts are quietly standing up for themselves. A quiet revolution is taking over in our workplaces, led by rebels who are among the most misunderstood and undervalued in the nation, that being Australia in this article, our introverted colleagues. The article goes on to state, they argue their career advancement is often blocked by bosses who view introversion as a form of social anxiety with innumerable personality flaws, such as lack of opinions and charisma, and an inability to collaborate well with others. Introverts argue silence does not equate to no opinion. They argue they are particularly skilled at engaging others in a one-on-one basis, and while their preference is to work alone, they adapt well to working on teams. Introverts in the workplace, your opinions, please.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree that the problem is that we judge introverts through our own lens. And if we're an extrovert, if we're in a meeting, and as an extrovert, I have an idea, then I'm likely to speak it and share it. I look around the room, and let's say there's somebody who's more introverted. I don't say to myself, well, they're just an introvert. They may have great ideas, but they're just not comfortable sharing it in a group. My assumption is, hey, if I have an idea, I share it. Since they didn't speak, they must not have one. And so what we have to do is change our own paradigm and understand that just because someone isn't vocal, it doesn't mean they don't have ideas, and it doesn't mean they're not incredibly effective. That if you understand why an introvert that an introvert tends to be quieter, then use your extroversion to pull their ideas out of that person. Don't judge them for being introverted. And you know, the reality is that introverts are more than half of the population. So we better not be screening them out. We should be pulling them out of their shell and helping them to be more assertive because they have great ideas.
Well, Merrick, based on that article, it sounds like you're going to be in business for a long, long, long time, right? Yeah, no, because it's as soon as I heard JC read it, I'm like, oh, Lord, here we go. I can't believe that is still happening. And Merrick, I've got a quick example for you because this happened to me about 8 years ago. I was working for an organization, sales-based organization, and we had every quarter, the leader gets up in front of everybody and touts how great everybody did. They did an amazing job, and they recognize them in front of people. So that's called the big end of quarter celebration. And we had the VP that wanted to recognize one of the sales analysts who did an amazing job, and because of his work, we were able to increase sales by 25%, right? Which is that's unheard of on a quarter basis. So he wanted to recognize this guy, and I know this guy very well, and I know that he is a dove. He's an introvert. He wants to stay. He doesn't want to be on the spotlight, right? So what does this VP do? in the middle of everybody, 250 people, calls him up to the stage and says, thank you very much because of what he did, ABC, we were able, and everybody's clapping. He got on stage terrified. And I mean, terrified. He was a black guy. He turned white. He was pale. He was so pale. And everybody's clapping. And then he comes downstairs. So I talked to him like, are you good? He's like, I just need about an hour. I just need to go away. Get out of here.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with the VP and I'm like, hey, why'd you pull so-and-so up there? Is like, Ricky, why not? Why not? We need to celebrate his success. I'm like, we do. But did you see his face when he was horrified? So you know what he's thinking? I'm not doing that again.
Right? That's all right.
And that again. So essentially the feedback that I gave that leader, I'm like, look, you got to get to know your people. And for him in particular, you shouldn't have called him up there. So he's like, okay, Mr. Smarty Pants, Ricky, what will you have done? I'm like, well, I know he's an introvert. Let's go ahead and reward him in private. Let's reward him in person. That's what he wants, right? So he's like, I can't do that for everybody. No, you can't. But that's when you got to put some elbow grease in there and get to know your people. Holy shit. How about that concept, right? Get to know your people, who they are, and what they do. Sounds like Australia needs some of that.
All right, I've got article number two coming out for you here. This is from BBC.com, going back to November 1st by Brian Lufkin. The article is titled, The Helpful Upside of Office Personality Test, Finding Out Your Myers-Briggs or Something Similar May Seem Silly, but There's Surprising Benefits to Taking These Assessments. The article delves into it a bit. And then they state one of the most famous measurements, for example, type A versus type B. If you're A, you're driven and organized. If you're a B, you're laid back and adaptable. Purportedly has its roots in this A and B example going all the way back to the 1950s American tobacco industry, where cigarette companies were inventing type A and reinventing that, selling it back to the people as a high-strung target demographic who needs to buy its product right away to take that edge off. These days, there's no shortage of news pieces pointing out the flaws that some of the most popular tests were made by people with no formal psychology training and hinge on unproven theories that people get different results when they take the same test at a different time, that they shove complex humans into boxes, that the self-reporting they require is biased by nature, that it's all a huge snake oil money-making scheme, how the traits the tests measure don't accurately predict what kind of employee the test taker will be, yet we still, at the same time, take them, discuss them, and maybe even become a bit more aware of our workplace behavior based on what we've learned. So despite the flaws, are there some advantages to performing these tests, and is it how we implement what we've learned that is key? That is the question posed in the first part of the article here. Once again, that's by BBC.com, author Brian Lufkin. With that being said, we do have a resident expert on personalities right here. What do you think about what Brian was saying in that article, Merrick?
I see articles like that periodically, and often their argument is that it doesn't predict success. And I would say, why do you think it would? That's not the point of an assessment of a profile. Like, if you think it's going to predict success, then you're using it in the wrong way. Yeah. That style is not a predictor of success. It's a predictor of how you are likely to go about being successful. And if, in fact, you use the profile well, that I teach people to use it situationally. So in other words, let's say I walk into someone's office. And I see they've got, we have these little desktop birds, right? Yeah, so if you go through the training program, you get like a little 6-inch eagle to put on your desk or a little 6-inch parrot. So you walk in the office. If I walk into a Dove's office, I see the little Dove sitting there and that person looks at me and they say, what do you need? I'm in the middle of doing something. Well, what I know in that moment is I'm not boxing you in and going to say, well, I see that you're a Dove. So I'm going to say, well, how are you? How's it going? I need to look at the fact that you're reflecting eagle back to me in that moment, and I'm going to reflect eagle back to you, and I'm going to say, I just need a quick answer. What do you think about this? So if you use it as a tool that's situational as opposed to locking someone in a box, then it's incredibly powerful. But I think a lot of people think that, oh, once you've taken these assessments, they're not right. They don't predict success, and now you're boxing people in. Not at all. It's a tool that you use to be able to relate to others.
That's also partially part of this mindset of the fast food society nowadays. You just did something and put you in this paradigm. You are identified as this, and that's black and white where we stand. Life is more complex. We live in the gray. As you've talked about during the show, some people might have multiple traits associated with the different bird types, the different personality types, and using that to their advantage in communication. End of the day, it's all about connecting with the people. I'm with you 110%. Yeah. Ricky, you look like you disagree with stuff right now. What's wrong with you?
No, actually, okay. I'm thinking, I'm
Or is that your normal face?
That's every day. I look weird every day. I can't believe you haven't noticed. Yeah, thanks. No, actually, I'm thinking, okay, so how would I answer this? And it's exactly what Merrick said. That's my answer. I can't answer it any different. You hit the nail right in the head. So, yeah, I'm good.
Okay, two more articles, and we're going to wrap this puppy up right here. So this goes back to it was updated on November 15th. This is from MassLive.com. Miles Garrett's swinging helmet at Mason Rudolph in Steelers Browns brawl sparks outrage on Twitter. The Cleveland Browns defensive end Miles Garrett, number 95, hit Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph, number 2, with a helmet in the head during the second half of a NFL football game Thursday, November 14th, 2019, in Cleveland, Ohio.
Right.
How do the two of you feel about that one? It's current events right now. There's a lot going on with that one.
That's not acceptable. There's a reason he'll probably have the largest fine and suspension in football history. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the thing is, when I read about him and I saw people talking about him as a person and they said he's actually kind of a quiet guy. He's into paleontology. Right. I bet that he's actually probably more of an owl. But you know what? Here's the thing. Him ripping off someone's helmet is not personality related. It's an amygdala hijack. It's where the amygdala, that fight or flight part of your brain, kicks into overdrive. He kicked into fight mode, and that has nothing to do with eagles, parrots, doves, and owls. When you have an amygdala hijack, the logic center in your brain turns off. The emotion part of your brain gets activated. It got overly stimulated, and you just saw pure raw emotion.
I was watching some of the video on this. Yeah, I'm gonna go with the really on that. And here's why. I really support what he's saying on this one, because watching the video back on some of this, the quarterback there, Rudolph, they go to the ground and he's trying to wrench the helmet off Garrett's head, and as Garrett pulls back to stand up, he kicks him in the groin with his cleats. At which point Garrett freaks out, grabs the helmet off Rudolph, rips it off, and then he took it way too far, hitting him in the head with the helmet he tore off him. But he was pushed to that breaking point. I agree with what he's saying about that amygdala flight or fight.
But would the what, JC?
Let it go. Just keep going.
Meatball. Right. So,
baby arm.
I couldn't say it. Yeah. So wouldn't an eagle be more inclined to react that way than a dove?
Well, here's the thing. At a normal, healthy level, eagles tend to be the quickest to anger, but they're also the fastest to let it go. Doves are the slowest to anger, but once you have made a dove mad, they remember it forever.
Yeah. 40 years later, it comes up again.
And you know, this transcends his personality. It really, you get to that place when that logic center in your brain turns off and you're acting under pure emotion. Anything can happen. You could bet that probably within about 3 minutes, when the logic center started to turn on, he started thinking to himself, "Oh my God, what did I just do?"
Yeah,
you could see that look on his face too.
Right.
So you just gave me an idea. The next time my wife brings up something I did like 20 years ago, I'm just gonna look at him like, "Oh, you're such a dove, sweetheart."
Right. Oh. No, now you're weaponizing it.
I'm trying to. You're right. You know what? She might find a weapon at that point.
Yes.
And throw it at me. Okay.
All right. Here's the last one for you. When you're ready, Rick. You good?
I'm good.
Okay. This is coming to you. Our last current event article from Orlando Weekly, dated 11/15/2019. Always got to have an interesting story from Florida in our here. It states, a homeless woman locked herself inside a Florida Walgreens to keep warm overnight, and WKMG finds that pretty strange. The article continues on to state that the woman remained inside a closed Daytona Beach Walgreens overnight to keep warm, And when police arrived on the scene, soon after the alarms went off around 5 a.m. Wednesday, to find a 49-year-old Valerie Phillips Hannigan smoking a cigarette in the women's restroom while eating food that she warmed up in the microwave of the employee break room. Despite reporting, the Daytona Beach police believe the woman intentionally hid in the store because she is homeless and the temperatures were in the 50s. As a strange Florida segment, reporters at the end of the day that were on the scene stated that her report included body cam footage of officers apprehending Hannigan, as well as showing the woman's mugshot at the end of the day. In the poorly written article, it continues to state that it's a troubling situation for law enforcement and store managers involved, but the real story is the lack of sustainable housing options for homeless people within the coastal community, especially when there aren't enough safe places to stay when temperatures drop. Your feedback and input, gentlemen.
I would say, you know, the same thing. I'm not sure her ingenuity there is tied to personality, or you know, maybe there, you know, there's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Yep. Safety and security is first.
It's first.
That transcends personality. You know, what's amazing to me is that in Florida, 50 degrees is freezing, right? Like I mean,
like it kind of is, man. It kind of is.
You know, it's like 20 here in New Jersey. I'm just saying.
Oh, that's right. You're in Jersey. You got a good view of the city from up there,
that's right?
Right.
You know, there are a lot of behaviors that are driven by our personality, and there are a lot of behaviors that just aren't. I'm not sure if that's a personality-driven behavior or Maslow's hierarchy of safety and security needs. What might have been interesting would have been the police's the response to it. You know, if you had a Dove police officer who's like, "I understand,
I was cold.
Like, we need to help this person," or you have like, "Look, the rule is this: they broke into the store, we take them to the jail." You know, I mean, it's like probably the response would be very interesting to see if we could correlate personality to it.
So two things from my perspective. Number one, I am so glad that we had a slow story week, that is a story, that there was a woman who locked herself overnight in a Walgreens. I'm okay with that.
And number two. And smoked cigarettes and warmed food up in the microwave.
I mean,
if you're going to do it, then do it right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, right. Overnight. So I'm with her. I'm with her 100%. So here's the thing. I quickly went into HR mode because I'm thinking, who closed down the Walgreens? And who did a sweep? Who didn't follow their processes? I need to have a conversation with the manager and find out how he or she let that happen. Who doesn't look inside? Right? So that's the first thing that came to mind. But then smoking a cigarette, I don't know. Yeah. So I'm with you. I don't know how the personality assessor would jump into this other than the communication style is driven by your personality. And you're right. What would happen if a cop was to show up who's a dove and like, "I'm not going to arrest this woman. She had nowhere to go." And then you got the partner who's an eagle who says, "Forget it. You want heat? The back of my squad car has heat. Here you go." And then put him in there, right?
Is that Eagle or Blue Falcon, Rick? I don't know.
That's probably a Blue Falcon. And I'm not going to explain what a Blue Falcon means. I'll explain to Merrick afterwards. No, but it does cry for the issues we're having in Florida. Because, yes, Merrick, at 50 degrees down here, is pretty cold. For the first time this year, even in January and February, I didn't have to turn on my heater in my car, and I had to do it last night because it was 52, 53. I'm like, I'm getting some food and had to turn that heater on. So, yeah, for us, 20 degrees would be a state of emergency. Kids will not go to school. Everything shut down. Florida's closed.
In Buffalo, I think it's a little different.
Yeah, it's vastly
Buffalo's flip-flop weather. Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is ridiculous right now. Honestly, it's down into the teens. I'm free. I don't even know where I am anymore. I walk outside and my head just gets cold instantly trying to think. Like, I'm ready to go, man. This is unreal. Hey, look, we are real close to the end right here. Before we completely wrap things up, Merrick, what is going to be the name of that book that's coming out this spring regarding the presidents, if I may?
Yeah, and actually it's going to be available for pre-order very soon. So it's called Personality Wins, Who Will Take the White House and How We Know.
And the best place to find that is going to be on your website or on Amazon. Best ways people can find you.
You can go to Amazon, wherever, especially online books are sold. You'll certainly be able to find it.
And with the current books that are out there, is there a limit right now, or people could still get out there and buy them, right? I mean, they are available, yeah, right?
Yeah, it's the beauty of books today, right? They live on forever. You can Amazon, you can get it, Audible, iTunes, Barnes & Noble. You can order it, download it on Kindle.
So people could definitely go there and grab the last one that's waiting on the shelf for them right now.
That's right. In fact, at the end of The Chameleon, you know, I was wondering if Audible and iTunes would notice if I wrote a song about the eagles, parrots, doves, and owls and snuck it in as a hidden track. Would they know? And the answer is no, they don't know. So there may be a hidden song at the end of the book once you get through all the fables. Just saying.
Well, not now, once this goes live. I mean, everybody would know at that point. Now they're listening. They're listening.
We gotta figure out what that track is now. Now we gotta download that album. We gotta buy that and figure this out, Rick. Absolutely.
I'm definitely getting the book. I'm getting the Taken Flight and the Chameleon. As soon as we're done, I'm gonna order it.
And Merrick, what are some of the best ways people could find you, sir? Personally, you are available for speaking engagements as well, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. If you go to takeflightlearning.com, you can learn all about our training programs, certifications, me as a speaker. And if you go, if you're on Twitter, at Merrick R. So it's MerrickR.
And Ricky, over to you.
All right. So some of the best ways to get a hold of us here at HR Talk, we have HRTalk@Biasco.com. You can text us or call us 407-501-8425. JC is available to MC your event. If you have a corporate event, you've got a wedding, you get a funeral, he's there for you. So go ahead and give us a call. Let us know. Yes.
Really?
Dude, you got to. Yes. Why not? Why not make a funeral exciting? Well,
if you book it, I'll do it. But I mean, okay,
there you go.
That's fine.
I can have you there. See? Oh, see? There you go. There you go. There's an eagle and a parrot trying to fight. All right. So also, you can find us on all kinds of social media, Facebook, Twitter, anything. Just HR Talk. Look us up. But what would really help us out, guys, is that if you subscribe, as you should, with any of your favorite platform, leave us a like, leave us a comment. You hate it, you love us, just let us know. That definitely helps us out.
Look, we know there's a lot of you in the shadows, and we greatly appreciate your support weekly. Those extra likes on the social media, definitely beneficial.
They really do.
Even if you don't want to, that's totally fine. We see the IP reports. We see the number of people that are coming through. We can't thank you enough. We are currently still right around that 20,000 subscribers weekly. To the podcast, you can find us on Apple iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, Player FM, and the list goes on. Please stay in touch. Please stay in tune. Gentlemen, over to you. Final thoughts, and then I'm going to play that music and wrap it up.
Great. Well, I would leave you with the thought, you know, if you think about the four styles, the key is don't impose your personality on the people around you. Use your personality, honor the personality styles of the people around you, and you'll be amazed at how you can connect.
There we go. And from my end is be aware what your personality style is, but more importantly, really get to the nuts and bolts of the personality styles of your team and capitalize on that, and that is the best way to really lead a team to success.
Ladies and gentlemen, Merrick Rosenberg on the show today. Thank you so much for being on. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is JC. On behalf of Merrick, Ricky, the face of the franchise and the entire team here at HR Talk, we want to thank you very much for coming back, staying tuned, and staying in touch. Until next week, drive safe. Have a good night.
It's cold.